Happy Christmas, Kyoko.
Happy Christmas, Julian.
So this is Christmas, and what have you done? Another year over, and a new one just begun. And so this is Christmas, I hope you have fun. The near and the dear ones.
This new information suggests that the Japanese government is still misleading the world about just how severe the Fukushima crisis is. But even more troubling is the impact this nuclear crisis on the other side of the world has had right here in the United States. There's shocking new evidence out that the Fukushima disaster may have led to the deaths of as many as 14,000 people in America.
The international response to the disaster at Fukushima Daiichi will go on for many, many years, and the NRC will continue to assist with that response as needed. As with other life-changing events, all of us should make every effort to understand and never forget the lessons that were learned at such a tragic cost.
Nightmare. After Fukushima happened, one of the more distressing things that we learned is that our government shut down most of our radiation detectors on the West Coast, so we don't know how much radiation we got.
My name is Mr. Burns, and I am so pleased to be standing out here today with all of these little people, these common citizens who are so mistaken in their anti-nuclear philosophies. I would like to set the record straight. Nuclear power has been very good to me. Radioactive waste is a very profitable business. Of course, it helps to externalize all the risks, to sing the praises of the Blue Ribbon Commission on America's nuclear future. One of the better ideas I have come up with in a long time, if I do say so myself.
To know this, just a few days after the Japanese Prime Minister declared the nuclear crisis of Fukushima is over, there's shocking new evidence that the disaster may have led to the deaths of as many as 14,000 people in the United States. According to a new peer-reviewed study published in the December edition of the International Journal of Health Services, researchers found that there were 14,000 excess deaths in America in the 14 weeks after the Fukushima meltdown. And they believe these deaths can be traced back to radioactive fallout. Most of the deaths were infants under the age of one, and studies show that despite infant death decreasing by more than 8% this year in the weeks leading up to Fukushima, infant death in America increased this year by nearly 2% in the weeks after Fukushima. A similar phenomenon was studied in Chernobyl in 1986, where more than 16,000 excess deaths were reported weeks after the meltdown. Numbers by the Center for Disease Control back up this study, finding that deaths in America's biggest cities spiked 4.5% from last year in the weeks after Fukushima. Sadly, we're just scratching the surface when it comes to how dangerous nuclear power is, yet we keep subsidizing reactors with our tax dollars. This is insanity.
I think that the 20-year cost of from Fukushima will be about 1 million cancers. And I base that on studies that came out of Three Mile Island. And despite what you hear, people did die at Three Mile Island. Dr. Steve Wing has done a brilliant epidemiological study that shows about a 20% increase in lung cancer 3 to 5 years after the accident. And so that's just, and that was small compared to Fukushima, and in a much lower population density area as well. Seen particles of radiation in people's gardens. Marco Kaltofen, the guy who does all the analysis for us, actually dug up his garden and found cesium clearly from Fukushima, and he lives in Boston. But it's low level and it's spread out up and down the coast. And I guess, you know, we're all in this together. We can't run and we can't hide. That doesn't hold... The Cascades. I think if you're on the West Coast in the Cascades, you need to demand more of your, you know, Oregon and Washington State and California, of your local officials or of the federal government to look into what's in the fish. Not just the saltwater fish from the salt that's coming over through the ocean, but also what's rained out on the land and is now, you know, in the local river.
It isn't just the fish. One of the first reports we saw back in late April was from UC Davis scientists, and they were talking about picking up radiation particulate levels in the Hetch Hetchy Reservoir. And that's the drinking water reservoir for San Francisco. So to say that our drinking water is exposed to radiation levels that were unsafe, and then they said, well, you know what, in disasters we're going to have a little higher level of unsafe. So the EPA's answer was, let's move the number up so it doesn't look so bad. But I mean, holy crow, is that the best we can do to protect ourselves?
No, it's not. You know, we also saw the hot particles in Seattle back in April. It was a wave of significant radiation hit the West Coast and sort of settled in on the Cascades.
I was in school and we had a duck and cover. We had these strange fire drills that weren't fire drills and you didn't understand them. And then as an adult, you realize that they were trying to get you into the holes to shelter. What was the fallout on the American populace in terms of particulate radiation versus Fukushima?
The answer is the government, if they were looking, didn't tell us. There's three good studies out. One came from University of Texas, and it was over Seattle, and they found that airborne radioactive aerosols were 100,000 times higher in April than normal. And that study, although they had the data in early April, they didn't publish until September. The other one was down in San Diego, where they detected radioactive sodium 5 days after the accident, which is another indication of how quickly the plume got here. Then the third was a study by Marco Kaltofen, and he had an air filter in Seattle and detected about 10 hot particles a day in the average person's lung capacity. The average person breathes about between 10 and 20 cubic meters a day, and he had essentially a cigarette filter with pulling 10 to 20 cubic meters of air through it every day. And every day he looked at those air filters and found that they contained lots of hot particles. Thank you.
rocks keep falling on my head. And just like the guys whose feet are too big for his bed, not the same to fit. Those raindrops keep falling on my head, kept falling.
Cause the government is telling us it's safe, but I said I didn't like the way we got things done, leaving waste with us. Those raindrops keep falling on our heads, they keep falling. But there's one thing I know, the waste they are sending us won't defeat me, it won't belong to happiness. It steps up.
Billion is $9 trillion. That's $3 trillion.
So in human costs, a billion.
A million people getting exposed, if the cost is even $1 million per person. That's a $1 trillion. Yeah.
So there's $1 trillion in death, human life.
Yes.
Between $1 and $5 trillion.
Right.
Depending on the actuarial value is what we're guessing. Between $1 and $5 trillion of death in Japan.
Right.
I'm singing in the voice of a nuclear utility begging the taxpayer and Native Americans to take nuclear waste away from them and onto their shoulders. It's called Please Take Our Poison.
Please take our poison. We've had it too long. Please take our poison. Our poison's too strong. We're losing our profits and losing our face. 'Cause nobody wants our nuclear waste. We tried to push it 50 states, we had to raise your electric rates to keep it safe. It's much too hard, and no one wants it in their backyard. So please, Uncle Sam, take it all off our hands. Out to the desert, on Indian land. They'll take your blankets full of smallpox and all.
Take it, we won't.
You make a ticket. You know their backs to the wall.
Take it, we won't.
Take it off our hands. It's a hot potato. Leave liability to the taxpayer. We'll make big tests to say the moon is safe. We'll even ignore the earth. To Yucca Mountain, we don't care if it leaves. Gets into the water, turns our children to free. Take it out to Skull Valley, there's some poor we can buy.
Well,
poison can't hurt them. We don't care if they're dying. 10,000 generations causes cancer and mutation. And last 10,000 generations causes cancer and mutation. We'll make fake tests to say that moon is safe. We'll even ignore the earth.
And the nuclear fuel cycle. You know, it starts with digging it out of the ground, and that's heavily subsidized. It's usually on native lands that we take over cheaply. And then there's also a lot of cancers from the airborne dusts that are also highly radioactive in some of the indigenous populations near the mines. Then it goes and gets converted into yellow cake, which is an acidic process. And we've got, you know, radioactive ponds that are highly acidic. As a matter of fact, nuclear plants kill more birds than windmills, because these ponds out in the West, migratory birds will land on it, and then they just die, not from the radiation, but from the acid. Then it goes to get converted into a gas, uranium hexafluoride, That gets enriched. That's another place it goes to, an enrichment plant. And then the gas gets converted back into nuclear fuel. So it went through all those steps before it ever saw the nuclear reactor. Goes to the nuclear reactor, runs for 4 years. And then the last step in the process, as we have now, is to take that fuel and eventually bury it, but more likely store it outside for a good 100 years.
And as we saw with Fukushima, no one knows how to handle that material in a crisis situation or in a fire situation. Like, people don't realize metal is flammable. So how could your local fire department manage that?
No, you're right. What scared the NRC and me the most on the first week was Fukushima 4. And that fuel was sitting out in this containment with no containment, rather. And if it had caught fire, the Brookhaven National Labs estimated that it would have killed 186,000 people from a fuel pool fire. So it's a problem. You know, the net effect of all this, we were talking about money, Union of Concerned Scientists has estimated that if you look at all the subsidies along the way, including some of the early subsidies of nuclear, it would add 5 cents to the production cost of a nuclear reactor. So here in Vermont, the production cost of Vermont Yankee is about 5 cents, which makes it close to natural gas as far as whether or not it's economically the low-cost producer or not. But then when you add in the 5 cents worth of subsidies that you and I have paid over the years, suddenly it's not even in the ballpark.
Everybody's wondering if mankind is cursed, he's ruining the sky and the ocean even worse. But I'll predict the cause of his eradication from the earth. Oh, plutonium is forever. Now oil slicks someday will disappear. We'll stop dumping PCBs in a few years. But there is one pollutant that we should really fear. Oh, plutonium is forever. But will it go away? For Afropos is never. It will be here past too late. Yes, plutonium is forever.
How many nuclear reactors are there, do you think, worldwide in operation?
Well, there's 440 worldwide, 104 in the U.S., so about a quarter of them are in the U.S. On a per capita basis, France has the most. They have 58, but of course it's a smaller country.
And how many of these reactors have failed during their 40-year lifespan?
Well, since Three Mile Island, we've had Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, and now three units at Fukushima that have melted down. So I guess we have to say six in the last 35 years. So the chance of a meltdown works out to be about one every 6 years.
One every 6 years, or as a percentage basis, it would be, give me a ballpark.
Well, six out of 400 is about 1.5%.
So would you get on an airplane with that rate of failure?
No,
over
I would
its
not.
Lifetime? No.
But now they're all after plutonium. They think it's such a good investment. Because plutonium is forever. Take it away! Plutonium is forever. Plutonium is forever.
Look at it is that human beings are just as error prone, just as limited, just as fallible in the things we design, the things we build, the things we operate, as we always have been for millennia of human history. But in the last 60 years, we've developed a series of technologies that are extremely powerful and radically increased our ability to affect the world around us. Technologies, some of which are extremely dangerous. So that's what concerns me. It's the clash between our growing technological power, especially as embodied in these dangerous technologies, and our unchanging fallibility, just like we've always been. That, I think, is leading us into great danger. Some of these technologies have been developed the way they have simply because of massive government decisions along those directions. Nuclear weapons, of course, and nerve gas and so on, were not developed as a result of ordinary market system operation. They were government projects. Other things like nuclear power, as I just mentioned, were heavily subsidized by the federal government to go in that direction. But there are certainly enough dangerous chemicals that have been developed by industry, which have been developed in the context of the market system. So it's a mixed bag in that sense. I think the overriding factor in all of these cases is just that we are so impressed, even intoxicated, by the wonderful things we can do with technology, by the amazing things we can get technology to accomplish, that we overlook in our pride, in our excitement, we overlook the fact that we're dealing with human beings who design them, who make them, who operate them, and human beings always make errors, always do things wrong, always embed some flaws in what they do. And I think it's the technological excitement and the spirit, that the power of the technology, that causes us to be sloppy in thinking those things through carefully enough.
It always looks pretty when it's 20 years out in the future before you figure out what's wrong with it. The nuclear saying is that, you know, you got to be 15 years old before you get zits. And I think as we go out in time and take a good look at these technologies, we'll find problems. If you want to make nuclear safe, it gets to the point where it's so costly, you don't want to build the power plant anyway, especially now with plummeting renewable costs. So can you make a nuclear reactor safe? Yes. Can it also at the same time compete with renewables, which are, of course, higher than natural gas? And the answer is no. So Wall Street is, you know, demanding federal loan guarantees for this. And, of course, we already subsidized Price Anderson Insurance. So Wall Street won't spend the money to build it, and Wall Street won't insure it. I think that's an indication that I think maybe I just answered your question.
Right. It's uninsurable unless the government steps in and insures it.
I think, you know, it's like when you have kids, and the kids are 20 and they're in college, they can stay home with you. When the kids are 30, if they're having bad times, they can stay home with you. But nuclear technology has been subsidized for 70 years. You know, it's about time to kick the kid out of the house after 70 years. The only reason these technologies are hanging around is because the Department of Energy is heavily subsidizing them even today.
Sounds like the MF Global problem, where the regulator is part of the industry, vice versa.
You're absolutely right.
So So we have this thing, complex systems, all right? And let's say that something works 99%. And a single moving part is 99% effective. When you take two moving parts and you put them together, both with 99% effectiveness, what's the odds of failure? Is it 99% or is it...
No, it's, well, you multiply the 99 times the 99. So it's about 98%. Not quite when you do the multiplication, but it's about that.
And how many parts does a nuclear reactor have?
10,000
plus. 10,000 parts. So you could have a complex system that has very good percentage, efficacy, very good percentage performance. And when you add in the whole system, then you get a very much riskier system than you would otherwise, just because of the complexity.
No, you're absolutely right.
And the current nuclear reactors, are they overly complex, or can they be made much simpler?
Well, the current plants, there's a thing called bathtub curve in reliability. And if you think of a bathtub as steep and then flat and then curved, as plants get old, they start... You know, just like a car. They're going to break in the first month or they're not going to break for 5 years. And then gradually over time, they start to break more often. So, you know, those numbers you were talking about, 99%, are changing adversely now because most of the nuclear fleet in America is over 30 years old. So they're starting to come up that curve in the bathtub curve. It's, we've noticed in the last year a dramatic increase in the number of forced outages in nuclear power. And it's exactly because of that. You know, instead of 99.9, now they're 99, and it's starting to go down.
Did you feel that rumble? Did you hear that sound? Well, it wasn't no earthquake, but it's stuck around. Made me think about power, like it or not. Gotta work for Earth for what it's worth.
Westinghouse has a proud legacy of having provided almost 50% of all the nuclear generation technology that's used today across the world. Nuclear energy is part of who we are.
Westinghouse is a very strong technology company with a very strong sense of accomplishment and get it done attitude. We are building plants today for generations well into the future.
No company is more focused on nuclear technology. As the world's population rises, its reliance on electricity and its
energy. There's a problem with the reactor? We're all gonna die! Ah!
Like it or not, gotta work for Earth for what it's worth, 'cause it's the only Earth we got. So I'm down. That's the only way to keep it.
35 times back now.
And the NRC will continue to assist with that response as needed. As with other life-changing events, other life-changing events, other life-changing events, other life-changing events, all of us should make every effort to understand and never forget the lessons that we learned at such a tragic cost.